Joe Pearl,
Reel 8.
Yes, I said you go to the Burtons and then tell me what you can have and what you can't have. I said, no, I said, if I'm going to have something, I'm going to pick what I want, not what somebody else is going to give me. Second-hand stuff. When I was up in hospital and I was walking about, I used to go to the pictures, who he was a Jew. I never paid for a picture to go to the pictures. And also he introduced me to Jewish people and Alton. And one Jewish person who had a shop with suits and shirts and ties and socks and everything. And also, don't forget, at that time, I had to have coupons. Where do I get coupons from? To cut the long story short, I went to that man and I said to him, look, my dear, I've got to leave hospital now. I want to go. I haven't got any money and I haven't got any coupons. He put his arms around my shoulders. He said, what are we for? Don't worry. Come, he measured me for a suit. He put a suit on me. Gave me two shirts, two pairs of socks, two pairs of shoes, a jacket, and a matching trousers, and everything. He said, go with God's blessing. This is how it was blessed.
Joe, the group you came over with, is this anything to do with the group which is known as The Boys?
And the book, that's right, The Boys, yeah. That is the book, yeah. You will find in that book as well.
You're in it, are
you? But you see, the thing is, when Martin Gilbert phoned me through one Sunday, he said, Joe, he said, you're one of us. Give me a little bit of your story. I said, where do you want me to start? Where do you want me to start? But I gave him a little bit, so I've got a little piece. I said, the thing that I've got to tell, it's beyond comprehension. I can't tell it anymore. So again, so I'm also in the book. It doesn't make me proud or sad or it's just the only thing that I am in my lifetime I only look for goodness in people. And I receive goodness back. And thank God I'm well respected wherever I have been. I've been in Brighton for 20 years or 18 years, I was very respected. They gave me honors right, left, and center. Went to Bournemouth, I was very, very respected. There is not a person in Bournemouth who doesn't know Joe. And while I was in Bournemouth, I built up a memorial for the 6 million Jews. I presented it with the 5 books of Moses, you know, the Torah, presented them. And when I left there, I bought it, and I'm here. I'm very, very well respected here. I've lived a life of joy, and thank God that I'm alive. Thank God I'm alive. And I don't know about, you see, I've come to live now in London, and really and truthfully, I'm a stranger. Because all the boys that came over, I have been part of them. Because I went after a week, I didn't have enough time to get acquainted with those boys in the shelter. So I went to Brighton and I never came back till 2 years ago. 2 years ago I came in here and I'm reacquainting with the boys. But really, I'm an outsider. Because I haven't got their hobbies, they've got their friends, they've got their car players. And I'm just fitted in here and there.
Did the organisers of the boys, did they keep in touch with you when you were in hospital?
No, I was absolutely forgotten. As soon as I went to Brighton, after the first week, it's like, as I told you, I'm an enigma. I'm a shadow. Nobody sees me. Nobody hears from me. Like, nobody's going to touch me, whether you're alive or dead, or who are you, where have you been? Not a word. Not a word.
And how about your family, Joe? You were saying about your trek across Europe. Did you ever find anyone?
Now I'm going to tell you about my family.
Because I wonder about your father, first of all.
This is a long story. Tell you something. Is it going? First of all, while I was in hospital, that other boy had a visitor. I never had a visitor. Nobody came to visit me also. And then I started talking with the visitors, and he just came home from Israel. And what was, he had a bite or he had some kind of blemish on his arm, and he had to go to a hospital. And while he went into the hospital, a sister came to see him to bandage his arm, whatever it was. And lo and behold, who do you think it was? My sister. He said, Perl, he said, I'm sure, he says, the sister who did my arm, her name was Sarah Perl. And I wrote a letter to the hospital, and I had a letter back, yes, my sister, Sarah Perl. And she said, what's more? We've got another sister here, Rochel, and she's here as well. So, right from the word out of hospital, my mind was trained to go to Israel and visit my sisters. Yeah? So we have started with the sisters. And what happened was that after I had my sitting guild and I met up with my friend at Bournemouth, Mr. Rosen, he says to me, what the hell do you want to be in London? You don't know anybody in London. Come here. He said, you know, I've got a big house here. You stay in the house and you make a living. He said, I've got a friend who just opened up a factory with dresses, and I introduce you and you work for him. I thought, you know, it's not that bad idea, but I didn't want to live with Mr. Rosen. I said, no. I said, I'll live in lodgings. He said, as you like. So I forsaken the job in London and I came down to live in London.
In Brighton, not Bournemouth?
No, Brighton first.
Brighton.
So when I went to work for this man, he just came out of the army and he started on his own. And my he didn't have enough money to pay me my first week wages. Yeah? Anyway, I worked for that man. I'll count him. And
you're saying about how you found your father, aren't you?
And this man, who had this factory, had a father, an old man, who was 83 years old. And in those years, he knew Herzl, he knew Weizmann, he was a Zionist. And all his life he lived to see the land of Israel. And in 1954, I said to him, I already saved up enough money to go to Israel. So he says to me, this man, he says, okay, as you're going to Israel, and I went for a few weeks, I can't just go for a fortnight. He said, take my father with you. He said, you've got relations in Israel. You take him to this and this address, and leave him there, and you do whatever you want to do. You go to see Jesus. In the meantime, not only did I have an old man who I had to look after, a pregnant woman got attached to me. A pregnant woman. She was sick of her face. She was like, Joe, I want this, Joe, I want that. So I was between the devil, between the old man and this pregnant woman. Anyway, in the meantime, I had a good time on the boat. And here, I'm a bad sailor. Sometimes with good days and sometimes with bad days. Anyway, we reach Israel. We get, first of all, the Dardans, disabled people, pregnant women, women with children, old people first, you know. They get up first and then probably. So I'm a disabled person, and I've got a pregnant woman, and I've got an old man. So we get up. And in the meantime, my sisters are waiting on the pier, and with the tenor, Joseph Pell, come so. Joseph Pell, 1,000 times, I thought, crying out loud. here I want to go, and here I can't let this old man, I can't lose it. And this old fucking woman, she's like this, and she's walking like this. I know you're laughing, it's not a laughing matter. Anyway, I eventually got him off the boat, and luckily enough, this old ventilation was there, and that got him off my hand. And of course, I took a cheroot and went to my older sister, who was already married, and I had two children. Already married, had two children. And she just moved in a new house, a new area, Ramat Gan, Amidal, you know. It was sort of one up and one down. So we had a door here, which was upstairs, and a door there, downstairs. When I got there, there was no windows, no doors on the hinges, no shower. Here I've been civilized. I'm used to showers and baths and toilets and windows open, windows to shut. But I had enough money on me, so I took a £500 and I said to my sister, to my brother-in-law, okay, I'm going to Jerusalem. I want to see Jerusalem because all my years it was all Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, and all the history of Jerusalem. So I said, I'll be away for 2 weeks. I booked myself in the hotel, and when I come back, I want to have windows, I want to have doors to shut and lock, not only shut, to lock. I want to have a bath, and I want to have a shower. You put the shower in here, and the bath here, and blah, 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 and off of that. Going to Jerusalem was an experience by itself. I can only sit in the front, as I've pointed out before. I can't sit in the back. And then with a person sitting in the front in this cheroot, a taxi, and I don't go until the taxi is full. And I can't sit in the back. And I said, let me, he doesn't want to sit in the back, he wants to sit in the front. So the taxi driver, you know, a Jew has got what ideas. He said, he opens up the front of the engine and he said, I'm sorry, you all got to get out because the engine is not in order. So we all troop out of the car, out of the thing. He said, you go all go sit over there. He said, when I'm ready, I call you out. He comes in, he takes my hand, and he said, come with me. He said, sit in the front. So I sat in the front. When the other fellow came out, there was no room for him to sit in the front, he's got to sit in the back. He said, I said that before. I said that. An hour ago, you sat here. And now I'm sitting here. Anyway, passed up and off we went. And this taxi driver was dropping off people here, dropping off people there, dropping. Until I was left with him on one to one. And then he started asking me questions. You know, where did I come from? Where was I born? Like I tell you. And all of a sudden, I could see tears coming out of his eyes. And he's, you know, screaming. I said, why are you crying? He said, I'm just saying, like, you know, you're a joke, girl, aren't you? I said, yeah. And I also was negotiating with him whether he would be good enough, I pay him, to show me, to be my guide in Jerusalem. He was the person that I pulled out that from that ditch. And he said, you must go until you meet my wife and this and that. And, oh, he said, I never thought that I'll ever see you again. I said, see, you bet me. And he showed the Jews and didn't want to take a penny for my feet to Jerusalem. He said, you must come have a meal in our house. But I didn't have time. I have so many things I have to say. So this is one person whom I saved his life. And I came home from that trip to Israel. And as I belonged to the Norwood, and I was on the committee, which raised money for the Norwood and, you know, the homeless children and so forth. And I came home from Israel a pauper. I didn't have even tuppence to pay for the bus to go home to my lodging in Brighton. Anyway, I met somebody on the station who lived opposite me, said, "Don't worry, I've got my car here, I'll take you." And he took me home. The second day, I got up in the morning and I got out with a stinger. I had a flu and the nose was running. My air was stopped up, my throat was killing me. In the meantime, before we went to Israel, we arranged a dance to raise money for the Norwood, for the charity. And we also had a hole, and the hole had to be, we hired it, and we had to leave it exactly as we found it, clean, everything shipshape. After about 2 days laying in bed, sweating like a horse, the chairman of the Norwood Council said, "Joey, says, you've got to get up to be at the door to collect the money." He said, "You're the only one who can sit in the front. You can collect the money." He said, "You can't just lay back." I said, "I can't. I said, I can't. The things are jumping in front of my eyes. I said, I can't sit." He said, "I'm sorry, even if you're dying, you've got to die in the chair." Anyway, I got up, and the dance that we put on was 1984. Do you remember this thing they play on the television? Big Brother is watching you on the television. Well, we put on that kind of, we had numbers on our things and tunings and Big Brother is watching you on the television, so corners with eyes, you know, looking all over the place. And all of a sudden, a girl comes along to the dance, and she looks at me, she said, "Do you want any help?" I said, "No, I don't need any help with it. You go in and enjoy yourself." So she said, "No," she said, "I'm quite capable of helping us." I said, "Do you understand English? I can do it all myself. And here, my nose is running, I can't talk, and standing in the door, the draft, I'm freezing." And watching that, she came, she was going to have a 21st birthday party, and she came to see the band that we hired, how much it cost, and what kind of a band it is, because she wants to hire it for the birthday. All right, go in. And then she hung around me. "I'll do this for you, I'll do that for you." I said, "Go off, claro." You know, she was getting on my nerves already. Anyway, she stayed behind, and she helped me clear up and everything else. She says to me, and by the way, she said, "I hired a taxi and I'll take you home." I said, "Okay. You hire the taxi, you pay for it, because I can't afford taxis." Well, that girl who did not leave alone is my wife now. What happened was...
We're talking about finding your father now, aren't we?
Yes. Yes. What happened was, one day I received a letter, and my wife opened it. And she came running to the factory, she said, "I've got a letter from your father." I have received letters before, but every time I asked for a photograph, they never sent me a photograph. So they were only after something. Well, when I saw this letter, I was convinced this is my father. And I wrote back, I told him to send me a photograph, particulars, I gave him my particulars. Anyway, he is my father. And how did we find out? Somebody was in the taxi in Israel, in the same cheroot that took me to Jerusalem. And that man was from the part that my father lived. And he said, mentioned something about Pearl, you know. He said, "I had his son in my shirut." Blah, blah, blah. That man went back and he told my father, the father of him. This is how we got to find that he was alive. Now came the thing, how do we meet? How do we get together? I also found out that I couldn't go to him. Impossible. And he couldn't come to me because I couldn't let him up to Russia. Because Russia was in charge. The Ukraine is only since the Russia broke up. And Russia was in charge. So what happened was, the year before, I went to my sister's daughter to her wedding with my two children and my wife to be at the wedding, because this was the first wedding after the war in the family. And I thought it would be a nice gesture for us to be together. You know, to be together. And I came back for my holiday, which my governor didn't appreciate that I went for 3 weeks to America because I was working for him, and he didn't pay me, so why the hell should I go for 3 weeks, and he can only have a holiday for 2 weeks? So there was already a bit of a feud going on between us, a bit hot air. And all of a sudden, about 6 weeks later, my sister from America phoned me that she has arranged with Dad that he will come to Budapest, and Rocco from Israel will also fly to Budapest, whether I would like to come. I'm the only son, right? I said, of course I'll come. So I said to I went to my boss, I said, on such and such a day, I'm taking 3 weeks off because I'm going to meet my father. He said, what the hell do you think you are doing? You can take weeks off whenever you like? And he knows. He was the man whom I worked for, a man who taught me to get married. He was my
best man.
Not only best man, but he was like a father to me. And he said, I'm going to meet my real father. And he objects. I said, you know what? You can stick your work up your, and I'm going, whether you like it or not. And I went. When we got into Budapest, we speak to my father. He phones through and he says, you know, I'm running into a little bit of trouble here. Because he had to have permission. Every district he went through, every stop where the train stopped, he had to have permission to pass. And he had all permission by the last one. And he said to us on the phone, if I don't arrive tonight, I can't come to see you. So here you are, three people from three corners of the world. And he gives us such a message. And then we knew what time he would be arriving, because there was only one train coming in. So I said to my sister, I'll tell you what we do. There was two entrances. One was going down the stairs, and one was on a level, from the other side. I said, you stand here, and I'll stand in the middle, and my other sister will stand right in here. One of us will see. And here we see soldiers and soldiers and soldiers coming up. And this coming up and that coming up. No time. We huddle together and we cry our eyes out. And we were going home. I said, you know what? I came in this way. I said, let's go up the stairs. So my sister said, why do you want to go struggle to go up the stairs when you've only got one leg? I said, no, I'll give you a bit of exercise. And as I come to the steps, I see a tall figure standing there with a guitar on his head. And I'll go up there. And I said, are you waiting for somebody? He said, yes. He said, I'm waiting for my son from England. And my two daughters, one from America and one from Israel. So I said, Dad, we are here. And I put my arms around him. And I didn't get the laugh. You know, so many years passed. 26 years passed. You know, I waited for his arms to climb around me in the hug. And anyway, so I pulled back and let my sister go, and I went and I kissed him, kissed him, kissed him. Still no arm. In the meantime, I had a bottle of whiskey, which was duty free, and we went to the hotel. And we started talking how his journey went, and we started talking about this and that. And he keeps on telling me that he is married and he's got a son. What a brilliant son. He's a great footballer. He's an officer in the Russian army. He teaches officers. And he's a brilliant boy. And my sister says to me, for goodness sake, you're also his son. I said, Sarah, so you keep quiet. in the meantime, I'm pouring the whiskey to me, pouring the whiskey. And I let him get it off his chest, get it off his chest. When he got off, when he stopped talking about his brilliant son, I said to him, how about sharing a little bit of life with us? You can come and live with me. You can come and live with Sarah. You can go and live with Rocco and Israel. So he says to me, what can you give me that I haven't got? I said, all I can give you is freedom. What do you mean freedom? I can do whatever I like. I said, how can you do whatever you like? Only last night you phoned me, so you said, if you don't get the last piece of paper, you can't come and see me. How can you say you can do whatever you like? So he says to me, what will I do if I can't live with you? I said, I'll tell you what you do. Simple. You get up in the morning, you go to synagogue, you pray, you come home, you have breakfast, you have a rest or a walk by the sea. You go to the synagogue, you pray, you come back, you leave, you have your own bed, your own room, you go to sleep. So he says, oh, well, he says, I'll have to chop wood. I said, where I live, we don't chop wood. He said, how do you keep your house warm? I said, bless him. The heating comes. He said, well, he said, I'll warm up the stones to keep your bed warm. I said, where I live, we don't do this kind of thing. He said, what do you do? I said, I press a button. And my bed gets warmed up. So he says to me, you're going to tell me, he said, have you got a horse and buggy? I said, no. I said, well, I have a horse and buggy. I've got a cow. He said, how can you drive this? You've got a bad leg. I said, mine is automatic. I press the button and the car goes. So he says to me, you're going to tell me you press the button, you have a baby. I said, no, then you don't need a man. They give him an injection and you're pregnant. He was giving me such stupid things that I found myself, I've got to prove the freedom bit. So I said to my sister, have you got the wedding photographs? She said, yes, I've got the whole album. I said, give it to me. So she gave me the album, I opened up that album and showed them, and then there was a photograph with the whole family, my sisters, my brother-in-law's wife. And also my wife, my two children, and me. I said, look, this is me, this is Mark, and this is Francis, my two children. I said, this is Sylvia, this is my wife, and this is. So he says to me, what? They'll let you take out the children? I said, see, this is freedom. I can take my children wherever I want, and nobody can tell me no. This is freedom. Now, if you want to live that kind of life, I already arranged to have false papers and everything. I said, within 24 hours, I need to be in England. Anyway, I found that there was no good token. He would never come out of Russia. And I would never see him again. But being a religious man, why did he come out of Israel? Because he found himself that with the area that they live, there is not enough. You've got to have 10 people to bury you. There isn't enough Jews left to bury him. This is why he came out of Israel.
Oh, so he's in Israel?
No,
today.
He was in Israel. He's dead now. Actually, that piece of paper I just had there is the years that he came out. And I made him a lovely 88th birthday. And he lived to 91. And about 3 years ago, he died.
Did you find out what had happened to him in the war? Did he talk about it?
No, it was such a thing with us. With the war, it came on. The trouble was, I came home too early. Oh. I came home too early, and nobody was there. And then he came home, he chucked out that man out of the house, kicked him out, and they took over the house, and he lived in the house. And in 1974 or something, and a piece of paper, I hadn't got in it already. I can give you the date he came up to Israel. This is also a story. He came as far as Vienna and he fell down the flu and he was dying. He was dying. And he came up with his brother. When his brother left in Israel and my sisters expected him to arrive in Israel, and he didn't. My father's brother said to my sister, "You can cry now. You'll never see your father again. He's too ill. You'll never see him again." And I didn't know this because I lived in England. I had a business. I was running a business. I got a phone call at 12 o'clock at night. "Joe, Dad is in Vienna and he is dying. You got to see what you can do." She puts down the phone. She has got a phone in the house. I can't phone her back. There in Vienna. "Here, I'm calling you. Father Vienna is dying. What do I do?" This is what I said. "I've got so many friends in so many different colors that I can't begin to tell you. I phoned to a friend of mine. I said to him, I want to get in touch with the Israeli ambassador.